Chewie. We're home.
Yes, we are. And couldn't be happier about it. From Pacifica Radio's KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, this is your broadcast. As heard on 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, up in Oregon, 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, 106.7 FM Queso in Cozy Cottage Grove. I wonder if those Patriot Movement blockaders are able to hear us today. Hope so. Hi, guys. 93 FM WLRI in lovely Lancaster, Pennsylvania. 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. And, of course, coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR in Nashville, and, of course, Radio Sputnik 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Glad you could join us for another thrilling, action-packed adventure that we call the Bradcast. I am live in studio today at KPFK in Los Angeles. Good to be back after the holidays. We've already been back on the air, but this is my first chance to be at the studios here at KPFK live. Therefore, my hope was to try to get to some calls with you today, but I've had so much breaking news just on the way over to the studio that who knows if we'll get to those calls or not. But if you want to try, get in now, get in line. I'd really love to hear from you in this new year. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Wanted to find out if y'all had any thoughts on Obama's executive action on guns, for it, against it. Why? Why not? Also, it's a new year, so I was going to ask what you're looking forward to in the new year and what you are not looking forward to this year. So if you want to ring in on any of those things or anything else, get on in and we'll see if we get to it. You may have to hold on the line for a bit because I got a lot to cover, including the breaking news. And that's 818-985-5735, including the breaking news. A couple of items here as we go to air. One, California Governor Jerry Brown has now declared a state of emergency out here to help with efforts to quell a calamitous methane gas leak near Porter Ranch in Los Angeles County. We talked about this actually. Nicole Sandler sitting in for me, guest hosting. I think it was on Monday or last week. At some point over the holidays, she talked with the Environmental Defense Fund about this horrific natural gas leak out in Porter Ranch. We've talked about it on this show ourselves before as we drove past it a few weeks ago, about a month or so ago, accidentally out on the highway. And we're like, man, what stinks? Oh, look, it's a sign for Porter Ranch. That's how bad it is. In any event, we now have a state of emergency declared by the governor out here as these plumes of natural gas continue to pour out from this natural gas facility, and it can't be stopped. Southern California Gas, the company that owns the natural gas storage field where the leak occurred, has relocated some 2,500 families who live near the field and has 1,800 families waiting to be relocated. Residents are reporting nosebleeds, headaches, nausea, and so forth. This is going on since the leak began in October, and the company has not been able to kill it. KPBS is today reporting that the amount of methane that has poured into the atmosphere is the equivalent of using up 53 million tanks of gas. Attempts to stop that leak have so far failed. They've tried several times to do that. It now has become officially the worst gas leak in California history and reminiscent of the 2010 BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill. That disgorged some 210 million gallons. 210 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico until it was finally capped after 3 months. Same thing here. They keep trying to cap it. They can't do it. Now, natural gas is not as ugly as oil. You can't see it. You can't smell it, except for this odorant they put in there so that you know there's a natural gas leak in your house. And it is that odorant and benzene and other things that are leaking that are making a lot of people sick out there. About not even an hour outside of Los Angeles, as I recall. This is up in Aliso Canyon is where it is. I was hoping to cover it. We got some more details on what's going on up there. I was hoping to get to it later this week, and I still will. But in the meantime, now 67,000 pounds of methane, the climate-changing gas that's even worse than carbon for climate change. 67,000 pounds of this gas has been erupting into the air each hour. It's now going to take SoCal Gas another 3 or 4 months to complete a relief well in order to kill the well that has the leak, which was originally built, I think, in the 1950s. So that's your fossil fuel infrastructure at work. What could possibly go wrong? California now under a state of emergency in order to try to deal with that leak. Also breaking on the way over here, speaking of fossil fuels, and frankly, speaking of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we've been trying to warn you about on this program for a long time, here's a story that puts both the Keystone XL pipeline and the TPP in perspective. The company behind the Keystone XL pipeline has now filed a legal challenge to the rejection of that pipeline, contending that President Barack Obama violated NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, in killing the project. The company, TransCanada Corporation, also filed a separate lawsuit charging that the Obama administration violated constitutional authority in their November decision to deny the permit to the company to build that Keystone XL pipeline that would ship filthy, dirty tar sands crude down through the U.S. and to the Gulf of Mexico for shipping elsewhere. So that's what's going on. This legal challenge under NAFTA, TransCanada is seeking monetary damages that could number in the billions for what it alleges is an arbitrary rejection by the White House that was made more for symbolic reasons to bolster Obama's fight against climate change, according to the suit. But this is what we have been warning you about when it comes to NAFTA, when it comes to TPP, and this sort of extra judicial process that can take place under these trade agreements that frankly, the courts have not. I think it was just before the end of the year. Maybe on our last show, we had Lori Wallach of Public Citizen talking about how a different trade agreement, the WTO, had fined the U.S. $1 billion a year because of our meat labeling requirements here. Both Canada and Mexico had challenged our laws. We were fined in this extrajudicial court $1 billion a year. And so what did Congress do at the end of the year? They said, well, we don't want to pay that $1 billion. We'll change the law. So the country of origin meat labeling laws that we had in place that were very popular, that tell you where the hell your meat is coming from, that's over. That's over. That was ended at the end of the year in the big omnibus bill. It was signed by Barack Obama, and it was because of this trade agreement and the WTO. So we keep warning you about TPP. We'll see if people pay attention, because it's only going to get worse under TPP. All right. So that's a bit of the breaking news. Recently, our old friend David Cobb Formerly the 2004 Green Party presidential candidate, now heading up the MoveToAmend.org effort to overturn the U.S. Supreme Court's horrible Citizens United ruling. Speaking of things we warn you about, allowing unlimited corporate money in elections. His MoveToAmend.org is working to amend the U.S. Constitution. And David Cobb appeared on the broadcast with our guest host, Nicole Sandler, who was filling in for us over the holidays to discuss the group's progress towards their goal of getting that constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United, to stop allowing unlimited corporate money in elections. They hope to amend the Constitution to read as such. Section 1, the rights protected by the Constitution of the United States are the rights of natural persons only, artificial entities established by the laws of any state through the U.S., established by the laws of any state, the United States, or any foreign state shall have no rights under this Constitution and are subject to regulation by the people. Imagine that. Through federal, state, or local law, the privileges of artificial entities shall be determined by the people through federal, state, or local law and shall not be construed to be inherent or inalienable. That's Section 1 of the amendment that they hope to add. And Section 2, money is not free speech. Federal, state, and local governments shall regulate, limit, or prohibit contributions and expenditures, including a candidate's own contributions and expenditures, to ensure that all citizens, regardless of their economic status, have access to the political process and that no person gains as a result of their money substantially more access or ability to influence in any way the election of any candidate for public office or any ballot measure. Federal, state, and local governments shall require that any permissible contributions and expenditures be publicly disclosed. The judiciary shall not construe the spending of money to influence elections to be speech under the First Amendment. That is the effort, that is the amendment that Move to Amend would like to add to the Constitution in order to overturn Citizens United and other similar decisions by the Supreme Court. It is, of course, a tall order, but that's the effort. And there's a lot of people around the country working towards exactly that. David Cobb on this program noted that dozens of jurisdictions around the country are taking to the ballot box, scores, hundreds, in various ways to express their interest in overturning Citizens United. Here's David Cobb earlier this week.
What we're seeing is our grassroots organizing actually bearing fruit. And I want to be clear, we didn't start lobbying Congress because we know that you have to build a grassroots movement before you can really exercise power. We've also helped 16 states pass resolutions of support of Move to Amend. We've also helped 600 communities pass resolutions of support. We've done the work of putting it on the ballot in over 300 local communities,
right,
where actual ordinary people get to vote on whether they support a constitutional amendment to abolish corporate constitutional rights and money of speech. We haven't lost yet.
That was David Cobb of MoveToAmend.org with Nicole Sandler on the broadcast over the holidays. Well, one of the places where actual ordinary people, as David described it, where those people did not get to vote on whether they supported such a constitutional amendment to abolish corporate constitutional rights and money in speech, is here in the great state of California. We didn't get to vote for it out here because in 2014, the state Supreme Court wouldn't let us, even though the state legislature had voted to allow a measure onto the November 2014 ballot asking whether or not the voters of California wanted the state legislature to adopt a proposal to overturn Citizens United. We were not allowed to vote on that. The state supremes blocked the effort in its tracks just before the election back in 2014. As we reported in August of 2014 at bradblog.com, the Overturn Citizens United Act, or Prop 49, will not appear on California's ballot this November, after all. This is back in 2014. The unusual, quote, advisory measure was placed on the ballot very recently by the California State Legislature. It called for Congress to propose an amendment to the United States Constitution to overturn the infamous Citizens United decision and its progeny, and to make clear that the rights protected by the U.S. Constitution are the rights of natural persons only. But the state Supreme Court in California, which is dominated by five Republican appointees, one Democratic appointee, intervened at the time to remove the measure from the 2014 general election ballot. As Ernest A. Canning wrote at the Brad blog in a follow-up to that matter back in March of 2015, the California Supreme Court got it completely wrong. They erred in their decision. They misinterpreted a U.S. Supreme Court precedent, or at least that was the argument at the time submitted by a group called Free Speech for People and several other advocacy groups in response to the state high court's 2014 ruling, disallowing the voters from expressing their opinion about Citizens United out here in California. Well, this week, almost a full year and a half after they struck it from the ballot originally, the California Supreme Court has now finally made its ruling in response to the challenge that they got it wrong when they removed Prop 49 from the ballot back in 2014. So here to talk about this now and explain what the hell happened, what the hell will happen, and frankly, where the hell he has been, is our old friend, attorney, political scientist, and BradBlog.com's longtime legal analyst. We'll explain why we haven't seen or heard much from him at the Brad blog or even on the Bradcast of late. We'll talk about that in a bit. But first, welcome back to the Bradcast, my friend Ernie Canning. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Brad. Happy New Year.
And to you. Good to talk to you. All right. Well, it looks like you had it right, Ernie, back in your article in March of 2015, detailing how the California Supremes erred in their 2014 ruling about this thing. Before explaining the latest ruling that now may get this thing back on the 2016 ballot, why was this issue so controversial in the first place? What was why did the California state legislature, who has the right to put this, to put initiatives on the ballot if they choose, why was this one nixed by the Supreme Court, the California Supremes, back in 2014?
Well, they relied on a case, 1984 decision, that American Federation of Labor versus U, which had kept a measure off the ballot because it would have forced members of Congress to either propose this amendment to the Constitution or forego their salary. So it wasn't really an advisory measure. And that's where their error really was made, because that case really should not have been controlling in this. And they don't come out now and say, well, gee, we made a mistake, but they do acknowledge that that was not a final decision at the time. And now that they've actually analyzed the precedents, they realize that that the legislature had a right to do what it is. A couple of important things on this decision. First, it doesn't establish that the people of California can use the initiative process to place an advisory measure on the ballot. You can't. And this matter could not have been come about as a result of the initiative process. But
so that, well, let me, Ernie, just get that straight. So what you're saying is, in the previous case, what they decided was the controlling case in this matter back in 2014. They looked at another a measure that was an advisory. It said, if you the state if the people voted for it, the state legislator must do this or that. If not, they will lose their salary. This measure, however, did not do that. It simply advised the state legislature. It said, hey, we the people would like you to pass a bill recommending that the U.S. Congress overturn Citizens United. There was no penalty that they faced. It was merely an advisory measure. And is that what has now been found constitutional, that we are, in fact, allowed to put advisory measures onto the ballot?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that has been constitutional in California and actually in the United States from the beginning. And in fact, in this court ruling, they pointed out that in 1892 there was a plebiscite in California in which 93% of Californians voted in favor of what ultimately in 1913 became the 17th Amendment, which is direct election of U.S. senators. And it was strictly an advisory measure. The legislature went to the people and said, well, how do you stand on this? And they basically said, well, you know, we want it. And you think about that when you think in terms of the impact in Congress. I know you mentioned David Cobb's reference to Congress, but consider the fact that if something similar, if we had somewhere between 80 and 90% of Californians who voted on whether or not Citizens United should be overturned and that the Constitution only rights only apply to natural people, which is what this measure was. If you got 80 or 90%, well, any representative from California is going to be hard pressed to explain why they are not supporting a constitutional amendment, and it could be then become an electoral issue, and that's why we have a democracy, is you're supposed to, you know, be able to challenge your representatives on issues like that. So what the court ruled in this case is that the legislature has a right to seek an advisory opinion from the people as part of its investigative powers with anything that it has powers on. And it's not limited to simply passing laws, because the legislatures have from the beginning of the Republic, and I'm talking about not just California, but but the United States Republic, have often passed measures trying to influence the members of Congress to exercise their Article 5 power to amend the Constitution.
You cited back in, again, this was March of 2015, early last year, in the challenge to that original 2014 decision that it's been in the Constitution out here in California since 1849 that the right of the people to instruct their representatives shall be in there, that shall have the right to freely assemble together, to consult for the common good, to instruct their representatives, and to petition the legislature for redress of grievances. And then in 1911, when this state adopted the referendum process where we could put measures onto the ballot, direct issues like this, and then in subsequent revisions of the state constitution, the right to instruct language has always been there. It's there today. It seems pretty clear that the Supreme simply got it wrong back in 2014. And now, with their new decision, does that mean, Ernie Canning, that we will finally get to vote out here whether it is our opinion that the state legislature should pretty please ask Congress to amend the Constitution?
Well, here's the problem. One of the provisions in the bill that was passed by the California legislature, which I believe was, well, I don't have the number in front of me, but the Senate bill, SB 1272, specifically directed the Secretary of State to place this measure on the 2014 ballot. Because that is no longer possible, it appears likely that we will have to go back to the legislature and get them to reenact this statute in order to place it on the November 2016 ballot. I know that MoveOn circulating an email trying to get their members to press Alex Padilla to place it on the November ballot, but I don't think the Secretary of State has authority to do that unless the legislature now reenacts this statute.
That Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, who has to make that decision, I guess. But it sounds like it's going to have to go all through the process again. I mean, and it underscores how long it takes, how easy it is to jam up the system. I mean, we've seen this, you know, over these photo ID voting restrictions, Ernie, that you've covered for so many years at bradblog.com. And now we're seeing it in this case very quickly. So once this passes through, if it passes through once again, California may finally be able to vote on this, but it's going to take another act of the state legislature, and it's going to take the signature of the governor. why was this challenged as you see it in the first place? Maybe a better way to ask this question, Ernie, is who is the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association? They were the ones who challenged this thing. Why did they challenge it?
Well, they keep in mind that Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association dates back to Prop 13. They were they are basically right-wing Republicans that aren't necessarily pro-democracy, and so they were making the argument, and you know the arguments basically relying on the U case, and the real problem was that the matter did not get adequately briefed the first time around, and frankly the California Supreme Court just flat out missed it. This time around the vote was 6-1 that. This is an appropriate matter. Justice Liu was the only one that dissented.
Interestingly, I note that the LA Times story reporting on the California Supreme's new ruling points out that they say, quote, the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association had argued that advisory measures would clutter the ballot. Okay. Clutter the ballot, I guess, is too much clutter. We can't figure out what's going on with this cluttered ballot. Well, that was when this was reported, I think, 2 days ago. The very next day, the LA Times editorial board posted an editorial headlined, quote, don't crowd the ballot with Citizens United advisory measure. Taking the very language of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association, that's your liberal media for you, Ernie. That's your liberal LA Times.
Well, there was an article from our friend Rick Hassan this morning in the LA Times where he is. You realize he's against an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to overturn Citizens United. He thinks that that it's wrongheaded and that what we ought to be doing is simply waiting for the next president to appoint new appointees to the Supreme Court to overturn Citizens United. Well, the problem with that is that Rick is basically taking a position that's contrary to the U.S. Constitution itself, which is that it specifically recognizes that there are times where the Constitution will need to be amended if this kind of thing happens. And Rick is particularly concerned, he says, about the possibility of a new constitutional convention, which would be if the states directly, two-thirds of the state, call for a constitutional convention, and then it would be unwieldy, and maybe they'd come up with something that they weren't instructed to at the convention. Well, that still would have to be ratified by three-fourths of the state, so that's not really the problem. And I think that Rick's bigger problem is an aversion to something that's in the Declaration of Independence that specifically talks about, you know, the governments are supposed to be for the purpose of protecting life, liberty, and so forth, and that Jefferson specifically wrote that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter and abolish it. So this really goes to the essence of government and whether the people should have a voice in their own government.
Well, and to be fair, I don't want to mischaracterize, not that you did, but I, since you're characterizing Rick Hassan's argument, he's a UC Irvine law professor and an expert in constitutional election law, I should say. Since he's not here to respond, you know, he, like so many of us, are trying to figure out, well, what is the best way to clean up this mess from the Supreme Court? And, you know, right now, nobody really knows how to do it, how to go about it, even Move to Amend, the group which I, you know, support their efforts, David Cobb, you know, even they have several different versions of an amendment and how to get it passed. It's just a mess. But you know what? Democracy is messy. The problem becomes when we can't participate in our democracy, when we're not even allowed to vote on something like this. Hopefully that is now corrected and California will get at least some say in this process before the end of this election year. Ernie, I'm running late. I got just a minute or two here, but since I mentioned this at the top, you haven't been writing a Brad blog lately, and thus You haven't been on broadcast much to talk about your articles of late either. So it's because you are, for the time being, taking on another role for a while. Tell us about that role, Ernie Canning.
Well, I'm technically listed as a senior advisor to the National Veterans for Bernie Sanders, Veterans for Bernie is actually what the title is, organization.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I guess, have a disagreement because you feel that you need to maintain your journalistic independence. My problem is that I see it, frankly, I don't see any way that you can be supportive of democracy as you strenuously are, and in this election, mm-hmm. not be somebody directly supporting Bernie Sanders and no one else.
Well, you know, when it comes just to respond to that, and by the way, of course, you continue to be welcome. I'd always love to have you at bradblog.com, but figuring out how to do it when you're actually a proponent of one candidate over another, when in fact at Bradblog, as you know, Ernie, because you've been a part of this, we go to bat not for any particular candidate, but for the voters. And, you know, to that end, we need to, you know, stay open, whether it's Bernie, whether it's Hillary, whether it's a Republican, whether it's Donald Trump and his supporters. We will go to bat for them. So anyway, I didn't want to get into the weeds here. But I just wanted to let people know that that's why we haven't seen much from you lately. I hope we get to see from you soon. I think it's fantastic, frankly, that you're working with Bernie Sanders. I support your effort in that. And to that end, let me ask you real quickly. I talk to people who, you know, who like Bernie a lot, but they don't think he can win. My parents, I saw them over the holidays. They were just one example. And I told them about this recent CNN poll just before the holidays, finding that while Hillary Clinton beats Donald Trump in a head-to-head matchup by 7 points, Sanders crushes Donald Trump by 13 points, more than twice the margin that Hillary Clinton would beat him by. And I, you know, I don't know if that would will be true if they both become the respective party's nominees. But the point is, right now, it suggests that Sanders does much better in a general election than people seem to understand. Why do you think that is? And why is it that people don't seem to understand that, that a lot of people look at it and say, I don't think Bernie has as good a chance of winning as does Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think that Bernie doesn't have as good a chance of winning as the product of what you and I have talked to before about the democracy deficit, and, mm-hmm. and it's basically a mainstream media canard. All the polling, and particularly Quinnipiac, shows that Sanders runs stronger against every Republican candidate than does Hillary Clinton. One of the major issues is that he actually can attract a good number of Republicans and independents, and we've been seeing that. I saw today, and it was almost disturbing, it's early on, but Politicus is conducting an online poll that on that online poll, 70% of the Sanders supporters so far have said that if Hillary Clinton is nominated, they won't vote for her in the general election. So I don't know if that means that they would vote for Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, or what they plan to do. But there is a significant consensus among a number of Sanders supporters that the choice is really between a continuation of oligarchy or democracy. If you take, for example, just the Charles Koch, at the time that, there's a lot of things that are better now than they were when Obama took office. But in 2009, Charles Koch had a net worth of $16 billion. It's now nearly $50 billion.
Yep.
So, and the more money that concentrates in the hands of few, the more mischief they can create through our increasingly calcified electoral system that that Chomsky decides is a plutocracy that retains only the superficial trappings of democracy.
Which underscores, by the way, the nerve, the unmitigated gall of the Koch brothers to complain about Barack Obama when their net worth has tripled since he's been in office. They shouldn't be complaining about him. They shouldn't be spending millions to defeat him and his agenda. They should be sending him thank you cards, brother. Anyway, Ernie Canning, political scientist, attorney, longtime legal analyst at bradblog.com. Hope he will be back soon, even while he's out there in the fight for Bernie Sanders right now. Ernie, great to talk to you, my friend, and let's try to do it again soon.
Thanks, Brad.
You bet. All right, we got to take a quick break, and we will be back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned. Yes, it is raining again here in Southern California. It is unbelievable, but it has been raining now, 2 days in a row in the midst of the worst drought this state has ever seen. Desi Doyen, the rains have returned.
Yes, the rain has returned to California. And they say it never rains in California. The girls always warn you.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
But it pours. It pours.
And it is pouring, and it is great. Of course, I don't know that it is anywhere near the ability to solve our worst drought in the state's history.
Oh, it won't.
It won't?
No, not this one. It's unlikely, let's say.
Okay.
The current thinking is that it is unlikely that this El Nino in and of itself will deliver enough moisture to California to completely eliminate the drought, because we're on a 3 or 4 year deficit. So it could be enough. That would be really dangerous as far as mudslides and floods and stuff go, but it seems unlikely.
That is, of course, Desi Doyen, our producer here, my co-host on the Green News Report. And Desi, we were going to run late today with a lot of stuff. We will still try, if we can, to get to some callers at 818-985-5735. Give us a call.
We'll try.
I'm going to try. But with all that said, no Green News Report today, as we're just getting back up to speed after being on the road for the holidays. Largely just because you're too lazy to do one. That's what I'm saying, Desi.
And
I'm
going to
go
sick.
With that. Yeah, and you're a little sick. So, but no sooner did we finish our last Green News Report for the year, our year in review of 2015, and stand down for the holidays. No sooner did we do that than the climate and weather went absolutely nuts across the country and even across the globe. Conveniently, it was right in the middle of the holidays. So this was convenient for the media as well as for elected officials who don't want to have to notice how bad this is getting. Here is just a quick roundup of what happened at year's end. Just all across this country, while nobody was paying attention. In New York City, on Christmas Eve, Central Park hits a record 72 degrees on Christmas Eve. It hit 66 degrees at 1 a.m. on Christmas morning.
That's at night.
Right.
In the middle of winter.
Yes.
67 degrees. That's Los Angeles temperatures.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, meanwhile, out here in Los Angeles, it was cold. We had high winds. Wildfires closed the 101 freeway. Across the country, we had warm winter weather all across the country. Heat records were broken in hundreds of towns across the eastern half of the U.S. In Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee, tornadoes killed 17 people. In Texas, it was 80 degrees on the day after Christmas, on the 26th of December. There were 9 confirmed tornadoes that hit the Dallas suburbs in Garland and Rowlett, Texas, killing 11 people. And Desi Doyen, your sister and her husband were just missed. Literally,
yes.
Four houses
Away from the destruction, yes. I mean, she was in the shower and she said, oh my God, I think that's a tornado. And it passed over her house. She said, as she described the whole thing, it's just like they say, freight train sound. But yeah, the people next door to her and just down the street from her, their houses were wiped away.
A tornado in Texas in December.
Very rare. It happened, yes.
Well, it happened,
like
and
that.
It was deadly. Winter storm Goliath killed at least 19 others from New Mexico to Maine at the same time as the tornadoes were hitting in Dallas. The blizzard in New Mexico killed an estimated 30,000 cattle in New Mexico and in West Texas. Meanwhile, in my home state of Missouri, you were out there in your home state of Texas. You just missed that tornado by a day or so. But in Missouri and Illinois, torrential downpours, 10 inches in 3 days over the holidays, record flooding that killed 32 people. A historic and unseasonable flood has brought the highest flood level ever recorded to the Mississippi River south of St. Louis. And you have these people, these right-wingers, you know, pretending that, oh, ISIS is going to get them. We've got to do something about ISIS. Climate change, who cares about that? You know, deaths already just over a matter of days over the holidays in state after state after state. And then, of course, overseas in UK, Northern England had torrential rains and floods.
Still ongoing. Too.
Still going. 13 inches of rain fell in 24 hours in one town. The new flood control infrastructure that they built, that they installed after record flooding 3 years ago. Guess what? That new flood control failed.
Not enough for a climate-changed world.
Damage to the British economy was estimated at $8.6 billion. And El Nino, which is happening this year, and after 3 years of promising El Nino conditions, it's finally striking. El Nino is not likely a factor in the UK, as historical evidence suggests its influence is fairly weak in that part of the world. I could go on and on. The North Pole hit above freezing temperatures for only the second time in recorded history.
And that's, of course, in midwinter. Full darkness.
Full darkness, and the temperature at the North Pole goes above freezing. Nothing to worry about here. Ethiopia, Malawi, deepening drought, projected 20 million will need food aid and humanitarian assistance. Of course, when it is covered on U.S. media in any way, shape, or form, they do anything. They do anything but talk about climate change. In this case, oh, it's not climate change. What climate change? It's El Nino. Here is MSNBC over the weekend, just after New Year's, I think. Sarah
Daloff.
Of MSNBC, introducing a segment talking about all of these people that were dying from rains, floods, wildfires, tornadoes across the U.S. Over the holidays.
Warnings are coming from across the globe that this year's El Nino weather system could be the worst ever. The Oxfam aid agency overseas is estimating the number of people worldwide who may need food and humanitarian assistance, rather, could be in the tens of millions. Back here at home, despite the devastating storms across the country the last few weeks, NASA is forecasting the worst is yet to come. They say El Nino will cause, quote, weather chaos these next few months.
Yes, El Nino will cause record chaos these next few months. You know what else will? These next few months and these next few years? Climate change. Global warming. That's what we have been warning you about. But on MSNBC, it's just El Nino. Nothing about climate change. Well, thankfully, our old friend Dr. Michael Mann was the guest on that that particular segment with this Sarah Daloff woman. Michael Mann, he's the creator of the hockey stick graph showing how temperatures rise along with the carbon footprint. You may have seen it in Al Gore's movie, Inconvenient Truth, that we've never seen. But I understand it was in there. Anyway, we've had Michael Mann on this show many times, Dr. Michael Mann. And thankfully, he showed up on MSNBC to say, well, you know what? No, it's not El Nino. Well, it's El Nino, but guess what else it is? It is climate change.
We are seeing unprecedented weather, not just around the U.S., but around the world. And part of it is due to El Nino. But the fact that this is the strongest El Nino we have ever seen during what just finished up as the warmest year we have ever seen. That is due to climate change. Climate change is playing a role here, and climate change is no longer playing a subtle role. We are seeing the impacts of climate change in increasingly more devastating weather events, the flooding that we've seen, the extreme warmth in other areas, the extreme flooding in the UK. We are seeing the impacts of climate change now with our two eyes.
Do you agree with the people who say that this could be the worst El Nino we've ever had?
She goes back to El Nino.
In fact, if you just look at the raw numbers, the temperatures of the ocean in the eastern tropical Pacific right now are the highest they've ever been. They warm up during an El Nino event, but right now they've warmed up more than they've ever warmed up before. That means this is, by that measure, the biggest El Nino on record, and global warming is part of it. The fact that the world oceans are warmer than they've ever been is part of why we're seeing such warmth in that region of the oceans, and we know that when that region, the eastern tropical Pacific, gets warm enough, it impacts global weather patterns around the world. And so what we're seeing, to some extent, is the effect of El Nino, but it's an El Nino that has been supercharged by climate change.
Your book is titled Dire Predictions, Understanding Climate Change. Take us through everything that the public cannot see that climate change makes a huge difference in.
Yeah, well, what we can't see, I mean, the impacts of climate change are the veritable tip of the iceberg, which is to say that once the effects of climate change become this apparent, become this visible to us, it means that there's a whole lot of climate change now that's baked in that we haven't even seen yet. A lot of climate change impacts that are going to get worse as the globe continues to warm some amount just in response to the greenhouse gases we've already pumped into the atmosphere. So, think of the climate system. Think of the global climate as an ocean tanker. You slam on the brakes, you don't come to a stop immediately. It's going to take some time to come to a stop. And that's why we have to bring our emissions down so dramatically in the years ahead, because we don't want to bake in even more dangerous climate changes.
Actually, that's why we need to bring down our emissions, not in the years ahead, but in the years behind. We should have done it long, long ago, and now we are paying the price. And the question is, how much of this climate change is already baked in the cake, no matter what it is that we do to try to stop it? It's very disturbing. That was Michael Mann. Thankfully, he was there to straighten out MSNBC over the holiday weekend after New Year's.
Yeah, and one other thing that he didn't mention in that particular clip is that we have already warmed 1 degree Celsius over pre-industrial times. And the limit that they've decided on at the Paris Treaty Conference at the UN is 2 degrees. So we're already halfway there, and we're already seeing these extreme, intense weather events happening more frequently and more intensely, pretty much records all along, one after the other. And that shows we still have another degree or so that we're going to have to try to slow down. I can't imagine how much worse it can get.
Well, start imagining. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. Let's try to take some calls. I'll take a quick break and come back to your calls. 818-985-KPFK. Dozens of people were shot each other on the day that Obama announced his new gun safety rules, his executive actions on Tuesday. So are you for it or against it? Why or why not? Also, tomorrow on the broadcast, I'm looking forward to speaking with Bev Harris of Black Box Voting about upcoming primary and caucus concerns. Though I admit I am not looking forward to the actual primaries and caucuses themselves, knowing what I know. Tune in tomorrow on the broadcast and you'll know what I know, too. So what are you looking forward or not looking forward to in this new year? Give us a call, 818-985-5735. I'll try to get to some of you as quickly as we can after this last break. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your broadcast. Stay tuned. Back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. It's also day five of the so-called Patriot Movement, holding the so-called Patriot Movement hostage up in Oregon. Yesterday on the broadcast, I interviewed Stuart Rhodes, president and founder of the Oath Keepers, who led the armed 2014 standoff against federal officials at the Bundy Ranch up in Nevada. He's now he's not throwing in with this Bundy bunch up in Oregon this time. A couple of sons of Cliven Bundy are part of that situation up at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. They've taken over the visitor center there. In any event, Stuart Rhodes, he's not going along with it this time, and he went so far as to admit that they were actually deceived by the Bundys back in 2014. Here's just one quick portion of what Stuart Rhodes had to say on the broadcast yesterday.
We didn't go there to get cattle back. We went there to keep the Bundy family from being murdered. They then took advantage of that situation and went and got their cattle back, but we went there originally just to protect them.
The Bundys took advantage of you guys being there?
So. Yeah, clearly. They didn't say, come help us with armed supporters to go get our cattle back. That's not what they did. They said, we're about to be murdered, come protect us. And so Ammon Bundy has displayed the propensity to deceive people. He's doing that right now.
Oh, you don't say. The Bundys, they're deceptive. They're deceiving people. They're taking advantage of people. That was Stuart Rhodes on the broadcast yesterday. He's the president and founder of the Oath Keepers, who led that armed standoff with federal officials back in 2014. You can hear that whole interview over at bradblog.com, kpfk.org, over at iTunes, where you can download any of our shows. Yes, we do this 5 days a week. All right, let's get to some of our calls here. Let's go to Bill in Lake Elsinore. Hey, Bill, welcome to the broadcast. What's up, sir?
Thank you, Brad.
You bet.
Well, I just wanted to point out that the profits involved in manufacturing weapons, like, it takes one of the manufacturers $42 overhead to sell what they could sell for $850+. As long as that exists, the guns will exist.
Because the NRA is not actually a gun organization, not a rifle, a gun safety organization like they used to be. They're actually out there working for the arms manufacturing industry, period. End of story.
Yeah, right.
Are you in favor, Bill? Are you in favor of Obama's executive actions? The lowest hanging fruit, frankly, that could possibly be done. Are you in favor of what he's doing?
It's just common sense, but it's still just, like you said, low hanging fruit.
Yep.
Posturing basically is all it's going to accomplish.
Well, I think there's only so much a president can do on their own with executive action, and I think there's some question about whether he can even do some of the executive actions that he's doing. That's going to have to be tested in a court of law. This needs to be, as he pointed out, frankly, during his announcement in the East Room of the White House yesterday, we need to take it to the ballot box, and we need to make it clear that make our voice be heard at the ballot box on this issue. Because without Congress, we can't get anything done.
But I feel like the profits weren't there.
Yeah.
The guns would be gone tomorrow.
Well, yeah, but the profits are there. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the call. Let me go to very quickly. Let's go to Morris in Long Beach. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind, sir?
Hey, sir, some time ago I was reading about a storm that took place in the United Kingdom, and I remember reading about David Cameron saying, money is no object, money is no object, and they were describing the storm as being of biblical proportions.
Yep.
Okay. So what are we going to do about oversight for Barbara Wiseman Schultz, for the Democratic National Convention? Well, what are we going to do about
Debbie Wasserman Schultz you're talking about.
Oh, is it Debbie? I apologize for that. What are we going to do about Debbie?
What's your problem with her?
Well, the problem is now I believe that she's catering this whole Democratic primary towards one candidate, and she's not opening it up for all Democratic candidates. I think she's kind of leaning towards her own favorite candidate, which is the corporate candidate. I don't want to, mention any names. So what do we do about isn't there some kind of oversight, someplace you can go to complain about how she's controlling the debates and things like that?
That corporate candidate.
Democratic Party's.
I'll mention the name. That corporate candidate you think she's supporting is Hillary Clinton, and the debate schedule in order to favor Hillary Clinton by keeping all the Democratic debates secretly on the weekends so nobody could see them for some reason. Well, folks in Florida can, A, vote Debbie Wasserman Schultz out of office if they don't like it, and, B, you can, next time you get one of those fundraising letters from the DNC, tell them, hell no, I ain't going to give my money to the DNC until Debbie Wasserman Schultz steps down. And frankly, maybe even then not give it to them. But that's what you can do. You can let them know not one red cent until the DNC starts playing fair with their candidates, Morris.
No oversight, huh?
Well, what are you going to do? Yeah, this is how the process works. Here's the oversight. Again, it's at the ballot box, but you can't vote her out. As head of the DNC, only the people of Florida can vote her out because she is a sitting congresswoman.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks, Morris. I appreciate it. 818-985-5735. We've got just a minute or two left. Let me go to Robert in Bell Gardens. Hey, Robert, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Robert. What are you looking forward to this year?
Basically, what I would suggest is that it is in the best interest of the United States of America and the world to re-legalize marijuana, the beneficial, versatile, historically legal marijuana, cannabis, hemp plant. The specific re-legalization reasons I would state and would be prepared to discuss are freedom of thought, First Amendment, consciousness, self-determination, and individual autonomy, the pursuit of happiness, inconsistent with America's economic system and America's political and social ethic, privacy, justice, Eighth Amendment, Ninth Amendment, equal protection, medicine, food, fuel, fiber, environment, family farms, employment, tax revenues, budget deficit, trade deficit, prosperity,
all right.
Crime, courts.
All right, Robert, that is all very good. And frankly, I would let you continue on because I'm rather enjoying it. I'm pretty sure you are the movie phone guy, if I'm not mistaken. You sure sound like it. But I would let you go. But I got to get out because I got to get out. I got to end this show. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate your call. It sounds like you favor marijuana and it sounds like you might enjoy it. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, of course, and to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn. My thanks also to G, our soundboard operator, and to my guest today, Ernie Canning. That's it. We'll be back with you same Brad time, same Brad channel tomorrow. Until then, you can find me on the Twitters and the Facebooks at TheBradBlog. And via email, I am bradcast@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.